because you know, we mastered the cold open here. So this is episode 34 of TH Fantasy, and we're doing something a little different this week. I am Tony, as always, and I'm joined by, drumroll, Evan Hoover. How's it going, man?
Hey, thanks for having me. It's going good. I'm glad you're here. We're glad you're here. I like talking football in June.
It's really weird when you decide that you're going to make content, I guess, and you have to do stuff when nothing's happening right now.
Well, something's happening. Mock auctions are filling up. Mock salary cap draft.
That is your thing. Tell me more about your obsession with this, because it just kind of happened last year, and I want to know more about it. We can do introductions in a minute. I'm super interested in this right now.
My big money league switched in 2006 to a bidding salary cap format, and I'm a kind of guy who doesn't like 90% of things and loves 10% of things, and fantasy players are like that. So I love just bidding on the people I want and not having to do it. I hate when I'm like the sixth round of an NFL draft and I'm like, can I just trade in all my picks and get a better guy pass? Yeah. I don't like these guys. Why do I have to pick them? I don't like picking in the back of the first round where I'm like, oh, good, I get to get a running back that has way too much tread on them and way too much mileage.
Last summer was the first time that I really messed around with salary cap and bidding formats, and it was so much fun. I know that there's no way I could get my home league to ever do it, but I've been playing, you know, fantasy football for 15 years and had never done it before. It was always snake.
So yeah, I can't handle snake. And I love being able to collect data, because mock auctions don't fire very much. So when they do, I'm in them, and I can collect early data for our readers and my friends, because that's really valuable.
Yeah, because you're starting to notice the trends, and you start seeing who's up, who's down, who's in, who's out. I think you were saying last night that, like, right now DK Metcalf is like a screaming steal.
Yesterday I got Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jerry Jeudy for $8 each on a $200 budget.
And that's ridiculous.
Yeah, wide receiver, that's the basis of my auction strategy is always the wide receiver market will crash heavily while there's still solid wide receiver twos on the board, so don't bid up for a wide receiver.
Which is so interesting to me, because in Snake, I think consensus has always been that you punt running back to.
Yeah. Yeah, no, drafting Cooper Kupp third overall is a perfectly decent strategy. But paying $60 for him in an auction will really make you not able to get those deals later on.
That's so fascinating. And that's something that I really want to join, like an auction, like a redraft auction league or a redraft salary cap league, just because it's a different way to play. And I think it changes the way you focus on valuation of players.
Yeah, we always fire a bunch come July and August. So you'll get in.
That's awesome. I can't wait. So tell me a little bit more about who you are, because I know who you are, because I've been a part of the football absurdity community for a while, but give me a little bit of background for our dozens of listeners.
Hey everybody, I'm Evan Hoover. I co-own the fantasy, media conglomeration, Football Absurdity. That it's way more glamorous than it actually is. I think we made $20 this year. And we have, it's just fantasy football, but we want to make it a little less broed up and a little more emotional and focus on the fun angle. We have a Discord, a podcast, a website, obviously, football30.com, and we have an amazing community that Tony is a huge contributor to.
I love that elevator pitch. It's honed. It's taught. Perfect.
Thanks. I've been getting interviews ever since I won the... What was the award I won? Fantasy Football Article of the Year? Ever since I won in 2019, they make me a talking head once in a while for just clips.
That's great, and I read the article. It's wonderful. Well-deserved. So tell me now, as a little introduction thing, Ryan and I, the regular host, like, we've gone through every team in football, and we kind of talked about who we like for the Super Bowl this year. And it's June, but June's a great time for hot takes. So who's playing in the Super Bowl this year?
Can I just say the AFC West?
Yeah, right.
I guess I'll go with Denver, because I've seen this formula before where Denver gets the final piece and is quarterback. We've seen that happen in the last 10 years, and they won the Super Bowl then.
Interesting. I think that's a. I picked Denver actually to go last in that division.
That's not odd. That's how crazy good that division is.
Yeah, that's true. It's one of those things that one guy can't stay healthy or someone emerges. Who knows? My Super Bowl pick this year is I think the Chargers go over the Rams. I think it's an all LA Super Bowl this year.
But we're both pretty. I would love that to happen. I love Herbs.
We're both AFC West, though. Like, both of us are thinking, like, here's the deal. Because I think anyone that comes out of that division is going to be able to beat any other team in football.
Kansas City showed that you can outfire Buffalo and take them down. So, yeah, and there's nothing but firepower in the AFC West this year.
Yeah. So, this is episode 34. So, something that I want to start doing is kind of like your all-time favorite athlete that's ever worn the jersey number of the episode number. And so this is our first episode of that. So tell me, who's your all-time favorite athlete to wear number 34?
I think we have to be the guy who got me into watching two different sports, baseball and football, Bo Jackson. I got the video game Tecmo Bowl for the original Nintendo, and I was like, I guess I'll pick the Raiders, and I was like, whoa, Bo Jackson's broken. And so then I started watching him in baseball. I started watching him in baseball, and I realized, hey, I like sports.
Bo Jackson rules. He was the one that he, like, trucked Brian Bosworth, right? That was effectively the end of Brian Bosworth's relevancy.
I'm YouTubing it now.
and he was just the coolest. He was just so cool, you know?
Who's your favorite?
Well, mine is also a 34 that you could play with in Tecmo.
Oh, Super I know. Bowl. I know who this is. I know who this is.
Who is it?
Yeah. It's a Walter.
Yeah, Walter's the best. Like, I grew up watching Walter Payton highlight videos. That was just kind of what it was. And my backup, in case someone took Walter, was Charles Barkley, for what it's worth.
Yeah, I was going to pivot to Walter or Barkley as well. I was going to say it's a weird coincidence that those two great running backs wore 34, but now I remember that was back when, like, a running back had to be between 20 and, like, 39 or something, right. So it's not at all a coincidence and actually a mathematical certainty.
Right. There were a lot of 34 running backs, but a lot of 33s, too. Tony Dorsett was a big one. Anyways. All right, so let's kind of move on. We're going to pivot to a little bit more sports talk from the other sports talk, which is different from the 20 minutes we spent talking about bathrooms in Dubai and Swedish hospitality.
That's what's hot.
And, you know, Swedengate is, yeah, that's all over the place right now.
Feed your guests.
All right, so I want to ask a couple questions because this is, like I said, this is stake your territory season, your make your claims. And last year, I remember, was the year of DeAndre Swift. This is going to be Swift's year. And he got hurt in Thanksgiving. And it's too bad because I think that's what people remember, and they don't remember that he was playing hurt most of last year, and I think he was still running back 4 in terms of PPR points per game. So yeah. I don't know if it's like a Lions stigma thing, but I know that in the past when you guys, especially on the Discord, have staked your claims, like it means something and it's pretty good. I know you guys were super high on the Josh Allen breakout year. So do you have any guys early this year that you are like that are these are reputation guys for me?
Well, I teased it earlier. Hall of Fame quarterback goes to Denver when they already have offensive firepower. Where have I heard this story before? So I'm definitely high on Russell Wilson, who's going for single digits in fantasy football salary cap drafts. He's going outside of the top 10 for quarterbacks. I think that he's a lock to pass up. I think a lot of these quarterbacks, like Kyler Murray, are just like coasting on fantasy legacy and aren't great anymore. I think they're going to fall off, and Aaron Rodgers too. So Russell Wilson's my guy right now. Maybe inflation will mean that the market drives his price up, and come August I have to pivot. But right now, that's who I would lay the most money down on.
I like that call though, because I think you're right. Russ is being criminally undervalued because people are seeing he might not be the best dropback passer in the league, and he might also not be the best mobile quarterback in the league anymore either, but he still does both at an extremely high level. And I think he was handcuffed by his play calling for sure in Seattle.
Definitely.
That's one of the biggest unknowns this year, but if Russ hits, I want as much exposure to the Broncos offense as I can, hopefully to catch some of that. For me, right now, my reputation guy is Aaron Jones. I think Aaron Jones is going to be, he's going to lead the team in carries still, and I think there's a good chance he leads the team in catches. So I'm willing to see Aaron Jones as a top three running back this year in points per game, if not better. Aaron Jones, that's my guy right now. He's a round two pick, and he's still undervalued.
So I'm trying to Google around because I don't have a lot of data and find out what his average auction value is. And yeah. I keep, and this is a good thing, I guess, but I keep getting football absurdity articles for 2021 at the top of my searches. I'm like, no, I don't want this. Why did I did this to myself.
You're in a prison of your own creation.
Yep.
Where's
he going in snakes?
In a lot of the, so I've been playing a lot. You know, Zach is usually like our big best ball guy on the Discord, but I've been doing the puppy a lot lately as well, and I landed Aaron Jones at pick 15 in the 8-hour one that I'm doing right now, and according to Underdog, his ADP right now is 18. So you're not getting like screaming value.
But yeah, that's a steal.
If you were saying earlier, you're like, man, I hate in Snake, I hate being at the end of the first round. If Aaron Jones is there, if I end up with Aaron Jones and, you know, Stephon Diggs, like, holy shit, I feel great.
Yeah, he's listed at $33, but knowing that how auctions work, he'll probably go for mid-40s, which is still RB2 prices for what you say is probably top-tier RB1. That's great.
I think you're going to pay, what, $15 less for him than you would Austin Eckler, and you might get similar production?
But maybe even $20 based on, I'm seeing 20 based on the 5 mocks with actual humans I've done.
That's
even better.
Yeah, that's someone that I'm really excited for this year. So we got Russell Wilson, we got Aaron Jones. So next question, let's move on. I want to know, obviously, if you write a player off and you say there's no way I'm drafting this player, if you have too many of those, I think it's a trap and you kind of screw yourself here. But so I want to preface this question with that little statement. And so the question is there a player that you're avoiding at, I say all costs, but really let's do like within a couple rounds of ADP. Is there a guy that's just not what you're interested in?
Yeah, that's the whole beauty of auction. I'm not interested in 90% of the people. If I had to rank the ones I'm the least interested in, it's these back-end RB1s. Christian McCaffrey, Derrick Henry, all the guys who have way too much wear and tear on them. I don't want to spend $50, $60 or higher when I can, you know, roll the dice, like you just pointed out, on an Aaron Jones. Roll the dice on somebody that it's a breakout, a DeAndre Swift. Roll the guys on a younger person with less wear and tear that I like better. So that's top of my list right now for the must avoids.
And I like that because it's less a specific player as much as like an archetype, really. And that comes to when I hear stuff like that I hear a, hey, like I'm looking at process instead of, and mixing that with certain players. And I think that's what you have to do. You know, players don't exist in a vacuum.
Yep, and it's a lot easier. It's always, everyone who does fantasy knows, it's a lot easier to predict busts than breakouts.
That's true. So for me, I have two guys that I'm kind of on the fence about, and that's, I don't want Tyreek Hill anywhere near his current underdog ADP, which is 21. I just think that's way too much. I'm not a Tua hater, but I don't think Tua can support two top 15 wide receivers.
That's the thing with auction. If I have any uncertainty, I can just walk away. I don't have to sit there with like the 19th overall pick in Snake and be like, well, I guess I have to bet on somebody here.
Right. And Tyreek Hill's going to be maddening, especially because it's, you know, their coach is a former, you know, he's a Shanahan guy. So that's going to be a running offense.
Yeah, there's just too many mouths.
Yeah, that Tua has to take care of. So, and if Tua isn't the answer, they turn to Teddy Bridgewater. So, just food for thought. The one that I really wanted to come to rag on, and I've been ragging on him in...
Well, let me throw something. Let me throw something at you real quick. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, no, you're good.
Because I want to know if this is where your tipping point is. In my last all-human auction, Tyreek Hill went for $19. So it seems like the market is also starting to shift to agree with you.
I'll take that. I mean, I'm not.
Yeah,
that's a great value. And it's the same for me with, like, you know, any of those running backs that you're talking about. If I can get them for 60% of cost, I'll take that chance.
Yeah, that's crazy value. That's no risk. There's no risk there.
Right. And I think, honestly, we'll see some video of you know, Tua connecting to Tyreek deep, and his ADP will shoot up, or his cost will shoot up. And then the other guy that I want to avoid at his ADP right now, because it's preposterous, is Gabe Davis at roughly like pick 51, wide receiver 25. That's bananas. That's way too much for me.
Really?
I'm not a Gabe Davis guy. I like Gabe Davis a lot. I think he's a good football player. I think he's got, like, some Mike Evans to his game. I don't think that offense needs him to be a wide receiver 25. So I don't think that's where he lands. I mean, I think he does fine, but I don't think that he's put up pretty much identical numbers each year. He's been targeted 63 and 62 times. Each season he caught 35 passes. He hasn't had over 600 yards in either year, but he scores a lot. That's his value.
He has
13 career touchdowns in 2 years.
25, really?
Yeah.
That's high. Now, in salary cap drafts, he's going regularly for $5 or less. Here's one yesterday where he went for $1. That's where I get him all the time. Usually I get, because I'm like, well, the upside's there. It's just a fun lottery ticket.
For $1, I can't list five players in fantasy football that are starters that I don't want for $1.
Exactly. And that, again, is why I just wait until the wide receiver market crashes, because you get that value.
And that's one of the reasons why one of the things that's most fun for me to watch on the Discord is someone come in with, like, hey, I'm new here. I've got an auction draft. What do I do? And it's like, you're walking them through it because you've done so many that it's like you get to watch them realize in real time that the market is crashing.
Yeah, and those new people are used to using a cheat sheet, and cheat sheets always inflate what wide receiver twos will go for because, you know, they're based on projections. And so for them, if they're not anticipating this, they're just going to naturally end up with some guy for $20 to $40 and never even see, by the time they get to the steals, they'll have filled their wide receivers. And so it's great to be like, look, this is going to happen. Don't look at your paper and bid to whatever number is written on there.
Yeah. I think about how many people ended up with Jamar Chase last year for $5.
Yeah, tons. He was a real fun lottery ticket. And that brings up another thing, is whether you're in Snake or auction, you want to have part of your bench where you just know that it's going to be for later in the season. We had so many questions over the years, like, should I drop Chase? Should I drop J.K. Dobbins in 2020? And we're like, you didn't pick him up for immediate production. Stop looking at your team and being like, well, this guy's not scoring. Think about when you're picking up guys to play them. You pick them up for later in the season.
It's funny because I did that, and I ended up having to drop Elijah Moore. But it was because I went hero RB, or no, I went straight up zero RB, and I went AJ Brown, Allen Robinson, DK Metcalf, Robert Woods. And by week four, they were all nothing. And Moore wasn't doing anything either. So it's like, and we'll talk about this in a minute too, like, we need to talk about, like, bench space. You need to think about bench space and, like, Like, if you have a five-person bench, I really don't want to put too many spaces on there to stash guys that might not hit right away.
And, that's true.
And I need like an expiration date. You know what I mean?
Sure. Well, I do that strategy I made called toolbox bench, where I'm like one to two guys for boring plug and play guys for bye weeks. One to two guys that I'm just going to wait to see if they explode later in the season. One to two guys that are just whatever, where every part of my bench is a tool. And the best players are the guys where I'm like, well, you cover two of those categories or more. Like DeAndre Swift last year. I'm like, you kind of get enough carries where you're okay for bye weeks, and you kind of might break out and become the it thing. So now I'm filling two slots with that one role. Those are players I like, too. For that reason that you said, I don't like to fill up my bench with players that will break out later when my team's 0-10.
Right. And woof. Yeah, that's pretty much what happened to me. And so that was one of the highlights for me of our Thursday night farceball was watching Elijah Moore have his breakout 3 weeks after I had gotten rid of him. It was fun stuff. So now we're talking about rookies. So I want to move on to my next question. Who is your favorite rookie for this season? Not Dynasty. Let's do strictly redraft. Who do you like this year as a rookie to come in and just crush?
Traylon Burks. He slid into the Titans right when A.J. Brown slid out. Wait, is that the Titans or the Panthers?
Oh, that was the Titans.
Okay, I get those mixed up because they're in the same location in my head geographically in the same colors. Yeah, right when A.J. Brown left, so there's catches, there's targets to fill. And I love how meme-worthy his hand size got in our Discord, so that always makes me laugh, too. He's got a decent quarterback. Yeah, Traylon Burks is the rookie I think is going to come in and redraft and actually make a big impact by midseason.
And I love that pick because I love that pick because we know his role right away. They could not have made it clearer.
Like, yeah, exactly.
You're coming in and you're doing exactly this.
Exactly. And he's got a quarterback who's like, look, I don't. This is what I do. I'm just this cookie cutter guy who does this. So it's not like there's a lot of variance in their game plan.
Yeah. Ryan Tannehill is like the quarterback of Smallville High. So my receiver, actually, my rookie receiver that I think is going to come in and make a big impact is not someone that I'm even that interested in, and that's Chris Olave. I think that he's going to get a lot of targets in that offense. We never know if Mike Thomas is coming back at all. Michael Thomas, is he coming back? Are you retired? What the hell happened to your legs? I think Chris Olave, like one of the things I liked about him as a prospect is that he was just polished. So I think the transition is quick. I think he comes in and he becomes a high floor guy. I think in like the kind of like the way the Saints used to use Brandon Cooks. I think that's a little bit of what we're going to get from Chris Olave.
Chris, I think that's great. I'm not calling you Chris. I'm just talking about Chris.
Chris?
Listen, Chris, I like this Tony Martin guy. He's going to be a breakout. Chris, I have two things to say, and I want to say them at the same time. Yeah, Michael Thomas is a known chuckle nut. Yes. Like, I don't think if something goes on with CTE with these wide receivers, they just go fall on Antonio Brown, and they don't usually come back. Also, Chris Olave was a freshman in 2018, but he was good on Ohio State, which makes him the last rookie that I can watch that I've discussed with my now passed away father. So I'm rooting for him too.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of there's like a history there with Chris Olave.
Yeah, there'll never be another rookie where I'm like, oh yeah, my dad and I scouted him for Ohio State and talked about him, you know, because all the kids that came in after 2019 that I didn't have conversations with my dad about. So, yeah, I'm hoping Klaus Olave will do great so I can still feel that connection.
Hell yeah. And so now I'm pulling for him too. You're a Buckeye fan. Is this quarterback the real deal?
No.
You don't think so?
It's so easy to mess a quarterback up, and the play calling last year messed him up. So I don't think he was that great when I watched him, but I've been wrong before, and I'd love to be wrong for all our Chicago fans. And sure, I was put up with so much sadness. And with a new regime, maybe they can just – nothing will fix you better than a coach being like, all right, we're not doing any of that stuff that broke you. We're going to fix it, and we're going to play around you. So I'm hoping. Another guy, speaking of quarterbacks, another guy I'm rooting for is Malik Willis on Pittsburgh, yeah, because it's going to be nice to finally be able to say, oh, good, Pittsburgh's quarterback did something. That doesn't make me feel awful.
You mean Pickett. Pickett's in Pittsburgh.
Malik Willis. Oh, he's in Pittsburgh?
Malik Willis is backing up Ryan Tannehill.
See, this is why this is what happens in June. This is what happens. Okay, Pickett. Road, man. Pickett, then. I'm rooting for Pickett. Malik Willis can go eat it. I'm rooting for Pickett.
Do you? I have a question for you. Is Pittsburgh drafting Kenny Pickett a makeup call for them passing on Dan Marino? I think so. I mean, 83. You know, they skipped the local boy, and now they're like, we got to make it right. We got to do this for Dan. We're taking Kenny Pickett.
Under that logic, was LeBron James Cleveland's way of making up for picking? Was it Danny Ainge over Michael Jordan?
Was it? Did Danny Ainge go over Michael Jordan? I don't know. This isn't a basketball podcast. We're gonna.
Danny, I know Ewing went over him, and another guy. Let me look this up. Or you?
I know it was Sam Bowie and Hakeem Olajuwon. I thought were the two. And Sam Bowie was Portland. Rest in peace, Sam Bowie's knees. All
right.
So
you're right. You are right. Nice job.
Hey, we are a basketball podcast. So. My next question is kind of a weird one. So I want to know your favorite rookie, the rookie you like the most, that isn't worth being rostered this season in redraft.
Well, I hope that you don't mind me doing this to you where I kind of go off fantasy for a minute again and again. But the Jacksonville, who's had the worst record 2 years in a row, is just drafted 70th overall, the third round. Chad Muma, a linebacker from Wyoming. And Chad Muma has type 1 diabetes that was diagnosed when he was a child, and he speaks at a lot of diabetes camps and does a lot of juvenile diabetes awareness. And maybe if you don't know me, my son was hospitalized 3 times in a month last year with diabetes, and maybe the only good thing to come from it was I started researching players, and Mark Andrews had a similar experience. And so I started talking to Mark Andrews and Baltimore all off-season. And my son, who never liked football or sports, got into it. And my other son got into it. So now we love football and we love sports. And it started a lifetime of memories together. So I want to see if I can keep that rolling. I'm not sure I should be hitching my train to the Jacksonville Jaguars, though. So I know this might be a wait and see, but I want Chad Muma to explode. Maybe not now when they still suck, but 2 to 3 years when they're Super Bowl bound.
I like Chad Muma. I did, you know, like PFF has those mock draft simulators that you can do. And he was always around at some of the Bears picks, and he had pretty good PFF scores. So I looked him up, and like, he's lining up next to Fendi Alakin, the guy that played for the Falcons last year. So, because they don't have Miles Jack there anymore. So he might get some shine right away. Who knows? Maybe he's on that Super Bowl defense right away.
I was rooting for him.
And so.
I don't think he's good for IDP this year, though, just to be very clear about what we're doing here.
I was going to say, it seems like he's going to be a rotational piece, maybe a special teams guy to start the year. So unless you're in a real weird IDP league, I'm not sure how I would value Chad Muma. But so my favorite offensive rookie that isn't worth rostering this year is Kenneth Walker. Seattle's going to be terrible. That offensive line, actually, I think that offensive line's a lot better than people want to give it credit for. But I don't think he's not going to get 20 carries in a game very often. And Rashad Penny went off at the end of last year. So I think it's going to be a committee backfield, at least to start. I think Kenny Walker looks good next year, maybe. But this year, I want nothing to do with him.
I think I picked him yesterday in the last round of one of our best ball leagues. And my rationale was, now that Russell Wilson's gone, the coach is just going to be like, I only wanted to run the ball. That's all I ever wanted to do. And we'll just run, like he always does, run his running backs into the ground until Kenneth Walker is the last person standing.
Well, right now, right now in best ball drafts, his ADP is pick 88. So, you know, if you're in a 12-team league, that's right around pick 7? No.
That's high for me.
Round 8. And there, yeah, right now he's running back 28. So I think there's a lot of inflated expectations there. The thing is, I think he's the best running back from this class. I just don't think he's in a situation that's going to make it worth it. It's going to look like Najee last year where he carries, you know, 14 times for 39 yards and a touchdown.
So Najee sneakily finished as a top, what, 5 running back?
Who?
Najee.
Oh, yeah.
That always blows my mind to look at the stats and be like, I don't remember him ever doing anything.
No. In fact, like, he did not pass the eye test last year when I watched him, and it wasn't his fault. He just, there was no separation there. His offensive line didn't do anything. It just seemed like he was running into a wall for 2 yards every single time. It was awful. I'm actually excited to see a Pittsburgh offense without Ben Roethlisberger.
Yep.
A lot of reasons.
Yep.
I think, I don't know, I was talking last week on the episode, I wonder what that offense looks like. Like, why would you draft George Pickens unless you're planning on getting rid of Chase Claypool? Because, you know, James Washington left, he went to Dallas, and Ray-Ray McCloud left, he went to San Francisco, and they drafted, you know, Calvin Austin, who's going to do the Ray-Ray McCloud things, and then George Pickens, who could do the James Washington things, but James Washington only got like 45 targets last year, and you're not going to pick someone in the second round to only get 45 targets in a year.
I don't know. Hear me out here.
All right.
They picked Kenny Pickett, and then they're like, okay, we need somebody to get them. Let's get George Pickens. They might be just saying, do I have to pick guys with the name Pick in their names? I misunderstood how this works.
You know what? Would that surprise you from the Steelers front office?
Not at all. Not at all.
That's a weird organization, man. They're like one of the only teams that never trades picks either. So it was like pick 20, you know, pick 62, pick 83. Like, it was just, they never trade. And I'm like, man, that's the one guy in your dynasty league that never trades anything ever.
Oh, that's right. Pickett went to Pitt.
Like, yeah, pick 20. Nobody wanted him.
And he went to Pitt. It was one of those guys where you're like, okay, you just go down the street from where you are now.
So the last thing that I wanted us to do today, which, by the way, this has been a lot of fun, so thank you for coming on.
Loved having myself. Wait, that came out wrong. I loved having myself is what I just said there. This is my first one of the year. I'm not quite good as a vamp yet.
It's all rough. We got Sam Bowie and all kinds of stuff, and Malik Willis. So the last thing I wanted to do was like a couple of mantras here. So like one of the things that I try to learn about when I play fantasy is not just players and teams and stats. It's myself and my tendencies. So I have a couple mantras that I wanted to go by. So I'll do mine and then you can do yours and we'll kind of talk about them and then we'll call it a day.
Cool.
So my first one, we've kind of actually touched on already, is that not all rookie wide receivers are going to be Ja'Marr Chase or Justin Jefferson, especially at the start. So if you draft one with like limited bench space, it's dangerous because you play the waiting game. How long are you willing to wait for that last spot on your bench to produce, you know, tangible fantasy results before you move on? Do you move on too early? Do you hold for too long? So when you're talking about like a toolbox bench, there's one guy that I want to have on there that's like a prospect, so to speak. So that's my first one. And then my second one is with rookies in dynasty drafts, when you're falling in love with your landing spot, I think it's kind of short-sighted. I'm thinking about like Sky Moore going over Jahan Dotson so often. Now, when we're talking about how we value rookies in redraft, I think that's a little bit different because I think landing spot pays more of an immediate impact. Whereas like, I look at Sky Moore and it's like, we're falling in love with the idea that this guy's going to come in and get 100 targets. And I don't know that for sure. I would rather take the guy that's a for sure wide receiver 2 and playing with a great receiver like Terry, who's going to take the safety attention away. So those are kind of my two mantras here. Don't expect too much from rookie wide receivers right away. And then also, like, if you're in redraft, don't worry too much about landing spot. I think we fall in love with landing spot and it's dangerous.
What is this landing spot you talk about?
So landing spot is just whatever team drafts you. If we're going to compare Sky Moore in Kansas City versus Jahan Dotson in Washington, clearly Sky Moore's in the better situation with a better quarterback. But I think that changes. You know, Washington has Carson Wentz for 1 year and then they have an out. So if Carson Wentz continues to be Carson Wentz, which he will, they'll be gone and they'll be, there's a couple of average league quarterbacks that are floating around right now that don't have permanent homes. Jimmy Garoppolo, Baker Mayfield. I think when we think about the future, we're thinking too much. Like in redraft, I don't want too many players that are going to get thrown the ball by Carson Wentz. But in Dynasty, I'm fine with that because I know he's not going to be around forever.
Yeah, I see.
It's, you know, it's one of the interesting things that I see when people that play a lot of Dynasty leagues, including myself, play in redraft leagues where I'm like, oh, this rookie's going to break out. Well, yeah, but you might be a year ahead of it.
That makes sense. So, okay, so my, yeah, sorry, no. You have to throw, so I should let you, the host, throw it to me, the guest. Okay.
So I am throwing it to you, Evan. Let me hear some of your mantras.
Number one right now that I'm telling myself all this weekend is you need to get auction data. Getting salary cap mocks to find, and I'm using salary cap and auction interchangeably because we're, I guess, as a culture trying to phase out auction as a word, which is all right. I like that we do that with outdated terms. So I'm using them interchangeably. It's really hard to get a mock that fills up with enough humans. I consider 75%. So 8 out of 10 teams, 9 out of 12 teams, humans, because the bots can't auction. You can program a bot to do a snake draft because it's just picking what's next on the top of the list. But as I mentioned earlier, you can't have a bot with a list of numbers and not have it way overpay for too much stuff. The bots will always buy three players and then be out of money because their list says, hey, bid this much on the top players. And when they do, they win. So you need humans to get the data. But that's hard to do. I made a process where I have to, I call it trawling. I join a mock, and if it's not full enough with 1 minute left, I go to the next one 15 minutes later. And eventually people start noticing this and doing it with me, and we snowball and pick up more and more until one finally fires. I need to, but to do that, I have to like be on it. I have to have my phone on a timer, and I have to be watching to make sure I don't go there, and I have to be, and it takes work. But it gets getting auction data in June is what gets us the hits for the website that and gets the people coming in early, but we're giving advice that no one else is giving yet and makes them stay. So I need to just be doing that more diligently. So that's get auction data now is one of my mantras.
Sure. I think there's a way we can do that where we like maybe set up like a rolling average, like, hey, every Saturday at 2 p.m., we're going to start heading over to Yahoo and trying to fill as many mocks as we can.
Well, Lead and I are going to start doing drafts on tap, which is where we stream us doing an auction. And we're going to do it on a weekend because that seems to be when more of our Discord members can do it. So, yeah, we should definitely have a regular date for that. That's in the works once Waleed schedule frees up in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I hope that. Yeah, I've been trying to get Waleed on this show, you know, because Ryan, Waleed, and I all do the DFS for Cheapskates on the Football Absurdity Twitch. And Waleed's like, oh, I'm busy. I'm like, man, you don't want to come talk Bears? And that's, man, I can't even imagine the crisis of conscience he has when he hears that.
Yeah, and for those who don't know what we're talking about, Waleed Ismail also co-founded Football Absurdity with me. He's a guy. He's funny.
Yeah. I've never heard someone talk with a thicker Chicago accent. It's delightful.
Yeah, he's good. He's good. He pops on camera.
Yeah. Okay, so do you have a second one other than your get as much auction data as possible?
Well, in past years, I've written it down here. It was don't reach for a wide receiver in salary cap drafts. But this year, it's all caps. Don't reach for a wide receiver in salary cap drafts. Now more than ever, the wide receiver market is crashing. Many different reasons. Number one, it's June and people still get wide-eyed about being able to bid anybody. That kind of tempers it down and won't be around come August. But other things will be. For instance, there's a glut of wide receivers at the top. Cooper Kupp going third overall. I can't remember that. Going for $60, $70. I can't remember that. That's sucking money out of the pool, and it's making at least one owner not want to invest in wide receivers after that because they bid one third of their money on that guy. And so the wide receiver market will always crash. I did 49 I did 150 mock auctions last year with enough people, and Yahoo was pissed because during podcasts, I would just have all 150 open in my Yahoo mail, and I would just control F to find out what the values were, and Yahoo just started going slow and slow, and something. They're like, yeah, you can't. I got to the limit where they're like, you can't have another window open in this email thing. And so 149 of those, a wide receiver 2 went for less than 50% of listed value. And in the 150th, I was streaming, actually. And so that was really great because we saw it coming, and I was able to point out, okay, this is the rare purple unicorn one. Here's how you see it coming, and here's what you do. So even if you're in that rare 0.75% of the time, we have a stream somewhere that'll let you recognize it and capitalize off of it. The wide receiver market will always crash, so don't reach for a wide receiver salary cap. All caps is my mantra.
It seems like almost like an algorithm that you're talking about.
It's just market. It's closed system economics. You know what I mean? There's when there's no outside forces affecting it, it's way easier to predict.
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess I never really thought about it like that. That's a deep mantra, and that's honestly. That's something why I want to start experimenting with, you know, with different formats of drafting, because I think a salary cap or a league like that is so much fun. And it's we did a couple last year. We did one for charity. We did one for Jersey. And those were great. I had a great time doing those. So, yeah, I'm excited. Hopefully, you know, if there's people that listen to this that aren't on the Discord, hopefully they join and can come, like, do that fun stuff with us.
Yeah, it's just Football Absurdity Discord.
Yeah, it's simple. You know how to spell all of those things.
Yep.
You just put them in a row, and it's guaranteed to be less racist than 99% of Discord communities.
We kick out all of the stuff. Last year, I did that thing where I made everybody go to the welcome room and click a thing that says, hey, we need to learn each other's pronouns. We're den of mirth and tenderness. And we lost about a third of our members within a week. And then we gained double our membership.
Right.
So, like, because people were like, oh, I can hang out here. Women like to hang out there because they know it won't be sexist and stuff like that. So, women like to hang out there, I think, is maybe too broad of a statement for a boy to make. So, I want to walk that one back. But it seems like it's kind of a safe space for fantasy people to be who they are.
And really, that's like, isn't that why a lot of us got into fantasy? Because it's like something that someone from work did or your college friends did or something like that. And so being able to have like a safe space to connect with people over a shared love of football stats, I think is wholesome as hell.
Yep.
All right. So do you have anything else to plug before we head out?
You know,
our respective Sundays?
You know, we do this sidecast for Thursday Night Football, Tony and I and legendary voiceover actor Eric Bra and Waleed. And Tony would always have, there's a thing where viewers can cash in viewership points or whatever for Tony to read his top five list of something. I think you had top five dictators that would be bad at fantasy football one time or something like that.
Oh, yeah, something like that, yeah.
Since I'm guessing here, I wanted to come up with my own top five. And one thing that I do is I guess growing up, I mishear songs as being more offensive than they are. I guess growing up in the AIDS pandemic in San Francisco kind of broke me, where I'll be like, a song will come on, I'm like, this is disgusting. And my wife has to explain to me that no, Bryan Adams is actually singing about the summer of 1969. And I'm like, okay. So I did top five song lyrics that I always thought were about contracting an STD, but now I realize may not be. Okay, so
okay,
song lyrics that I always thought might be about contracting an STD. Famous song lyrics. Okay, so the first one's by Foreigner. Foreigner.
All right.
It's just me and you. I'll show you loving like you never knew. That's why I'm hot-blooded. Check it and see. I've got a fever of 103. I was always like, oh, okay, I get it. He's sleeping with strippers and catching STDs. No, apparently that's not it or whatever. And I'm like, oh. Okay.
He's just so, literally hot-blooded.
Foreigner. Yeah. To me, it was obvious. It's not until like, I got married and started pointing this out. I was like, no, none of that's about any of that. So, and I guess, yeah, I do add a bit of embellishment. The next one, number two, is if not for Cotton Eye Joe, I'd been married a long time ago. And I was always like, that's about getting swabbed for STDs, which I don't even think you have to do anymore. I don't know if you were alive for this, but they used to have to go up in there with a cotton swab to see if you had STDs. The last one I did, they just took my urine, and I was like, yep. Wow, you rock.
Urine and blood, right?
And I was always like, so I have too many STDs, so I can't get married and settle down because I will give it to my partner. I thought that was what Cotton Eye Joe was about.
You know what? I don't feel like that's super off base. I'm not going to lie to okay. you, but I interpret it a different way. I interpret it like Cotton Eye Joe is like slang for a symptom of an STD or something like that. Like, okay. You know, she took my pants off and she saw the Cotton Eye Joe and now we're not getting married anymore.
No, it's a symptom. You're thinking of Cotton Mouth Joe.
You're definitely on the right podcast for that.
Yes. The next one is a famous lyric by Frank Sinatra. I've got you under my skin. Like, I was always like, duh, what else could that be? But like, I guess it's not. Like, I've got this rash here. I got from you. Like,
I keep right? telling you, you're not off base. You're really not.
And then another one is the classic song, Fever. I don't know who sings it. The old jazz standard.
Fever.
Yes. Yeah. You give me fever when you kiss me. Fever when you hold me tight.
Yeah. Oh, no, come on. Why? That makes perfect sense to me, too.
Yeah, I've never, I guess it's just a way of saying you're hot for somebody, which is slang, but I feel like when you start to talk about actual symptoms, then you've gone past the boundary of innuendo and are just telling me that you need me to, you know, bag it if I hold you tight. So, yeah.
Right, because I'm not going to hold you less tight, I'm just going to wear a condom.
Wear a condom, people. That's what you should take from this.
Wear a condom.
Everything is an STD reference. And then the last one, and I have to look up the band because you'll know the song, but I don't remember the band. Let's see here. Cutting Crew, I guess, is the name of the band. But the song is I Just Died in Your Arms Tonight.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. I Just Died in Your Arms Tonight. It must have been some kind of kiss. Ooh. And I'm like, some kind of kiss? We know what that means in rock and roll. That means doing it.
Oh,
yeah. So I was like, okay. And it was, you know, it came out during the AIDS pandemic in San Francisco when just everything in my life had some tinge of fatal STD disease. So, yeah, I died in your arms tonight. It must have been some kind of kiss. You give me fever when you touch me. Fever in your homie tight. I've got you under my skin. What else was there? I'm hot-blooded. Check and see.
So, like, you know, it's weird because you're talking to me about how, like, your schema for this is, you know, I grew up in the 80s during the AIDS epidemic in San Francisco, so all of these things I hear as STD references, whereas, like, I'm just a, you know, boring-ass dude from the suburbs, but I have a master's degree in history, so all the things you're saying, I'm like, no, he's wrong. These songs are about tuberculosis. Like,
nice.
These are all, like, Edgar Allan Poe references, you know? Like, this is Mask of the Crimson whatever.
That's the beauty of the eye of the beholder interpreting art.
Yeah, that's art. That's art, baby. So, I think that's it. That was a great way to end. That was well done.
I worked hard on it. I worked really hard. Like I got up early for a week straight and just looked at song lyrics until I was like, oh, I remember this one. This one, yes. And thought about my childhood.
Is Bohemian Rhapsody about HIV?
Put a gun up against his head, pulled the trigger, now he's dead. I always thought was an oral sex reference.
Me too.
Okay.
All right. Well, I think that, you know what, that's probably the best way to end it. So we'll sign off.
Oh my God. So that's another STD. Jeez. Okay.
Yeah, but I think that one actually is. Like, I don't think that's a misreading. I think that's intentional.
Maybe. Yeah. Well, maybe if there's anyone.
Maybe
if there's anyone. No, that would just be like Freddie Mercury to do that.
Wouldn't it? Like, it seems totally on brand.
Agreed.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Bye, everybody. Hopefully I'll see at least one of you on the Discord.